and white.
Good morning. My name's Adona White, staff here at the Regional Water Board. I appreciate your time today. I'm here to update you. Thank you. I'm here to update you on monitoring efforts in Elk River and Freshwater Creek. And this is item 5. There was an errata issued to this item. Did you receive that?
Yes. Say again?
There was an errata issued to this item? Yes.
Yes.
Great, thank you. There was an error in figure 5 of the EOSR, and the errata corrects that error. And
chair doesn't have it. I don't.
Yeah, you
do. I? I have a.
There was an error in 2 years of the pool depth data. Okay, great. I apologize for any confusion caused by this error and the correction. Help me out, Greg. Thanks. It's not just me. Good. Okay. Yeah, I know how to use a keyboard. Thank you. Okay. Great. This presentation will cover first a brief background on Elk and Fresh for those of you who may be relatively new to this topic, and also cover why monitoring is being conducted in these watersheds, a summary of the monitoring data and what they may indicate about trends in Elk and Fresh, a brief description of the recent monitoring summit, and next steps associated with monitoring and data analysis. Elk River and Freshwater Creek are the two largest tributaries to Humboldt Bay. The upper portion of these watersheds are owned and operated for industrial timber harvesting. The lower portions and in the valleys are occupied by rural residents. In Elk River, those residents rely on the river for their agricultural and domestic water supplies. Large portions of the watershed are also comprised by steep terrain and underlain by marine deposits, which are highly erodible and produce fine sediment. The basins were logged extensively, and there was intensive re-entry in the mid-80s. And the rate and scale of timber harvest operations, coupled with storms, led to significant discharges of sediment. And that caused channel filling, elevated suspended sediment loads, impaired fisheries habitat and domestic and ag water supplies, and also has resulted in elevated frequency and magnitude of nuisance flooding of properties, roadways, and homes. That's why we keep hearing about these watersheds. The regional board and the executive officer have taken many actions in these watersheds. I think based on Bob's presentation, you've heard about a lot of those actions. And some of those were the issuance of monitoring reporting programs. I'm going to now update you on the trend monitoring and describe the two types of monitoring that are going on. One is trend monitoring of the channel bed, and the other is turbidity monitoring. Pacific Lumber Company, now HRC, began monitoring in 1994. And there was a more concerted, and that was in Elk and Fresh, a more concerted effort began in 1998 when the executive officer issued a monitoring reporting requirement under the 13267B authority. Soon thereafter, the Trends Monitoring Network was expanded in its purpose to also meet the HCP monitoring requirements. And since then, there's been an effort by our staff, often myself, and the HCP signatory agencies to work together to ensure that there's not duplicative monitoring and be efficient with the monitoring resources. And there, that monitoring and reporting requirement still exists in Elk River. We never issued a requirement in Freshwater Creek, but rather relied on the HCP monitoring. And that was conducted annually through 2004, but with evaluating the monitoring resources, that frequency has been reduced in Freshwater. So the most recent data in Freshwater Creek is 2004. With respect to turbidity, suspended sediment, and stream flow monitoring, the first effort to do this monitoring was in 1999 by Salmon Forever, who is a citizen-based monitoring group. In 2003, the network was greatly expanded, the network of turbidity stations, as Salmon Forever installed two new stations in Elk River. The executive officer required Pacific Lumber Company, under a monitoring and reporting program, to install a suite of stations, as well as Green Diamond Resource Company, one in Elk and one in Fresh, because they have property there and manage also. And again, we keep trying to be efficient with our use of monitoring resources, and the HCP signatory agencies have indicated that this type of monitoring is very relevant for their habitat conservation needs, and they're very supportive of this and have relied on our monitoring requirements. So that's a little background of why we're doing monitoring here in these basins. And now I'd like to cover the channel parameters that are being measured and some of the target values. Oops, too fast. This slide covers the parameters and also the target values. And the targets listed on here are from our desired conditions report for cold freshwater salmonids, as well as from the habitat conservation properly functioning conditions matrix. First of all, the D50, which is the median particle size of the channel bed surface, it's an indicator of the suitability of the spawning habitat, as well as the stability of the river system and the ability for it to transport its sediment load. Fine sediment particles in the substrate, the channel bed, those have a potential to cover spawning beds as well, and also can lead to smothering of the eggs and limit the emergence of the fry that from those spawning beds. And there's two particle sizes that are of interest, less than 6.35 and less than 0.85, and those are data for those are available. And also lastly, the pools, which provide critical shelter from predators and high flows for fish. And we like to look for pools greater than 3 feet in depth. First off, in Elk River, there's the pebble count data, the D50. Those data go back to 1998, and there's quite a bit of variability in the data. Generally, the lower stations have been consistently fine, and it's a low gradient stream. We expect that, especially it's in this depositional reach now. And the upper stations, there seem to have been a coarsening from 99 to 2003 and then a fining. So, and the target values were not met in the last 3 years of data at any of the stations. In terms of percent fines less than 6.35, there have been no changes basically in the data. They're pretty flatlining and they're high in fines. In terms of the particle sizes less than 0.85, which is shown in figure 3 of the AOSR, there's again higher fines in the lower watershed. There's quite a bit of variability over the years. There seems to be a recent reduction in those fines on the main stem and South Fork, indicating a slight coarsening, more sandy. And currently, about half the stations meet the target. And so generally, though, the upshot of it is that the bed remains dominated by fines. What I'm not showing you with respect to the channel bed is cross-section and thallig profiles. We're still trying to rectify getting those into actual elevations. And so those hopefully you will see at some point in the near future. With respect to pool conditions, this is the corrected chart. That's why I'm showing it to you here. This is what's in the errata. There's been quite a bit of variability over the years in pool depths without much of a discernible trend. Stations have been added and dropped, and so really with that context, it's even more difficult to catch a trend. But there's towards the end recently, they're edging towards the target on some of the stations. But I would just offer that our conceptual model of what's happened in Elk River of large pulses of sediment coming into a low gradient reach and having it stick and perhaps some surface coarsening and elevated fines flushing through, these data seem to be consistent with that. But you'll be hearing more about that as we get deeper into the TMDL analyses. I am going to offer you some snippets of Freshwater Creek data. These two slides are provided by Matt Beflavin. He's unable to be here today, but provided me these. With respect to the D50, there's been quite a lot more variability. And actually, in general, Freshwater Creek seems to have more variability than Elk River. On occasion, the D50 targets have been met. But over the last 2 years of data for Freshwater, which is 2003 and 4, none of the stations met the target. With respect to percent fines, less than 0.85, data span from 96 to 2004. And there's several of the stations do show improving trends, and 9 out of the 12 stations met the target in the 2004 data. With respect to percent fines less than 6.35, there's data available from 2000 to 2004. Most stations have a lot of variability without clear trends, except McCready and Little Freshwater Creek do show some improvement. And 3 of the stations in 2004 met the target, and those were all in the Freshwater Creek main stem. And pool depths are available from 2000 to 2004. Again, there's not much in the way of trends, except the stations seem to track each other well. There seems to be a year of shallowing in 2002, and then a scour in 2003. And all I can offer is that there was a recommencement of harvesting in 2001 that may have led to some sediment discharges, and there was a large storm in early 2003 that perhaps led to scour. And 4 of the stations are mighty close to the target there in Freshwater. Turbidity and suspended sediment monitoring. There are 13 stations in Elk River and 13 in Freshwater Creek, and that counts all of the different monitoring entities. Also, that includes 1 reference station in the Headwaters Forest Reserve. And we anticipate that over the next couple of months, data processing should be accomplished for the 2003 through 2008 data sets. And that seems to be going well, but it is absolutely no small task for the people doing that work. There's a lot of data lines. Also, suspended sediment increases with flow, and with trend stations and a variety of drainage areas, it can be difficult to transcend the climate signature that and determine if conditions are actually getting cleaner or dirtier, or if changes year to year are due to rainfall and flow variability. We are still exploring a variety of metrics and to look at those, and as the data processing and reporting catches up with the collection, we are getting more of a range of wet and dry years that will help look at those normalization methods. And 2003 and 6 really stand out as high flow and sediment transport years. So I'm confident that with the range of years we have, we're going to be able to come up with some good conclusions. Also, we're in the process of internally identifying appropriate metrics which can indicate if turbidity and sediment loads are supportive of beneficial uses and are meeting our objectives. These two watersheds are very unique in the richness of turbidity and suspended sediment data. But now we get to face the challenge of characterizing which conditions meet our standards, which we really haven't had to deal with in other basins. But now we have the data to support these things. So, lastly, I would like to update you on the monitoring summit that we held on July 17th that Mr. Corbett and Mr. Hales were able to attend. I appreciate that. It was a monitoring summit that focused on sediment monitoring in Elk and Fresh and the suspended embedded parameters that I discussed and those currently being monitored there. The goals of the summer were to bring together the different monitoring groups and share what projects are going on and improve the coordination therein, because a lot of these groups don't tend to talk to each other. Put on the table what data we're looking at in the TMDL and vet it prior to use and in their use in the TMDL. And identify any needed improvements in the techniques and analyses. While there's a lot of commonality, there are slight variations on the same theme by the different monitoring groups, and we look at the effect of those variations on the data. And also to look to the future and evaluate, will the existing monitoring be able to track changes, or even better, help us to predict future watershed conditions. The summit was a coordinated effort by Regional Board staff and Redwood Community Action Agency, RCAA. And RCAA is the recipient of a Prop 50 grant, which is designed to support sediment monitoring and restoration efforts in Elk and Fresh. And it's nice to have those outside resources put there. In addition to groups conducting monitoring in the basins, including Pacific Lumber Company, now HRC, Green Diamond Resource Company, Salmon Forever, and Fish and Game, we convened a technical advisory committee, TAC, that TAC's formation was specified in the Prop 50 grant, and they consisted of agencies, staff, academics, consultants, all with expertise in sediment transport, measurement, and modeling. And RCAA facilitated the dialogue. And we were perhaps overly ambitious with our agenda for the day, and so there's definitely follow-up that's needed because we weren't able to fully explore some of the topics, which include the turbidity analysis and aspects of those. Transport patterns for different size fractions, and a lot of the scour and fill patterns in particular. And what was accomplished, though, was I think it was a really successful format for sharing information and improving communication. And honestly, from my perspective, it was really great to do that outside of the boardroom. which I appreciated that the suggestion to use this format. We did identify a lot of the common approaches in the methods as well as variations and discussed means of quantifying the different error for each step of the collection and analysis techniques. And the TAC, we oriented them and described the available data that was relative to sediment transport. And the TAC is likely to remain engaged by RCAA with our input to help us inform where we may go with our analyses, whether that be more measurements or modeling, and inform restoration efforts. So that's good. In terms of next steps, like I said, there'll be follow-up between RCAA and the TAC. And also, we're going to continue to work with the monitoring groups to improve the networks and methods and keep looking for more ways to have efficiencies in the monitoring. We're going to further evaluate the changes in bed elevation and scour and fill locations to inform the changes, the historic versus current changes in the river conditions and its assimilative capacity. We're in the midst of refining a conceptual model of the deposition transport patterns, like I mentioned, and working on the metrics for suspended sediment and turbidity monitoring in the context of our water quality standards for incorporation in the TMDL. And I really hope that the next time I speak with you, it's about the ELK TMDL and its work products.
Okay.
Any questions?
Questions by the board? Jeff?
I don't have questions as much as I do have comments. First,
great.
I just want to congratulate you for pulling this all together, from participating in it. You did an amazing job, and I really think that you weren't giving it enough justice for the participants and how eager and willing they were to share their information. And when you have three different entities that are taking all of these measurements who haven't necessarily been on the friendliest of terms in the past, and they're talking about technical differences in the monitoring equipment that they use and really identifying on the challenges of using this, and it was absolutely great. So I think there was a lot of progress made there. Secondly, the technical advisory committee, it's just a crack team of experts. I mean, these are regional experts in this science, and whatever you can do to keep them engaged and involved, absolutely, I think you need to capture that momentum. So however we can, through RCAA, if they're responsible for engaging the TAC or keeping the TAC on board, whatever encouragement we can do to make that happen, that's just fantastic, because I think that how you have thought they would be involved in the process, I think, is a great way to do it, and just for their input will just be, I mean, these are the people that are, there were people in that room that are writing the journal articles that are commonly referenced in the industry, so they're that good. And then I guess thirdly, I guess I do have a question, is what is the schedule? So you've got the next steps. When do you expect to get back with the TAC or have your follow-up summit?
With respect to getting back with the TAC, I am in the process of trying to work out with RCAA. The grant has lots of components, some of which is to help small landowners with either erosion control plan development or restoration plans. And as they go out and interview landowners, they're really seeing, wow, this is a really big project potentially, given as a lot of the channel filling effects are widespread. It's not just, restore this slumping bank here. And so they're really learning that as they do their interviews and go through their stepwise process. I think in terms of the TAC, I would like to bring RCAA's information as well as what we understand of the system, and together with the TAC, ask them, kind of get their insight into the next steps. Does it make sense to do sediment transport or hydraulic modeling here, or are we better off doing some measurements? So that's kind of on a bigger picture, what to do in the river, and that's really an RCAA shop, but they're definitely looking to us for buy-in and advice. With respect to some of the technical details that were discussed at the summit, I am definitely following up on those with individual members, and I imagine we'll have a follow-up summit. We don't have that scheduled.
Yeah.
And it may be smaller working groups might be more effective for the more detailed topics to really dive in.
I think it's so far what you have is just a great foundation for guiding future monitoring and really looking at you have a strong database and data collection, and it seems like it's already everybody's kind of given the head nod to we accept what's been done out here, and we have a wealth of information that we can draw inference from and vet it through a very powerful technical team. So it's
Well, I really appreciate that encouragement and support there.
Mr. Corbett?
Well, I want to chime in. I think this process worked better than any in the last 10 years that I've seen. And when the board asked for an update on monitoring, you just took it about three levels higher than that. And I saw more commitment to science as opposed to positions during the time period I was there. And that's going to be the foundation to solving the dispute. I wanted to note for the record, and I believe I heard you correctly, that we're splitting elk and freshwater, so one's going to come up and one in the time frame that we're considering the TMDLs. Is that correct or not?
Would you like to address that, Kat?
Yes.
Yeah.
Matt Bouflavin is committed to the Fresno PL litigation, and as we are still in the process of producing documents and generally fussing with that lawsuit, that's his first priority. And so because of that, progress on freshwater is, it's just not coming along as fast as elk is, which Adona is working as her top priority.
And I just want to, of course, I lament the transfer staff time to that, but I think because there are differences in the watershed and because we're now going to a more science-driven approach, I think that's okay to split them rather than politically consolidate them. So I think maybe a misfortune of where we're allocating our staff time, but I think we'll get a good result out of it. And then I'll ask you my last broken record question I always ask. Do you think the current, based upon what you heard, do you think the current in-stream monitoring is sufficient to establish the trends throughout the watershed? And if you want to defer, that's fine. But as you know, I asked that, and I appreciate you trying to avoid duplicative efforts, and I realize that's costly, but that really is the measure of our work.
I think that the trend monitoring network is very helpful in indicating what's happening in the watershed, particular to elk. The layout of the watershed, the two main forks and the main stem with small tributaries, makes it a little bit difficult because the tributaries do serve as fisheries habitat, but they tend to be steeper and not so appropriate for a lot of these channel monitoring parameters. So that's a difficulty that those just honestly aren't captured sufficiently. And a lot of those stations on the tributaries have been dropped by the Pacific Lumber Company staff because the parameters weren't so appropriate. So, but the turbidity monitoring on the sub-basins, I think we have a fabulous network. And as the source analysis comes together and we can compare the data from those stations with the inputs from the hill slopes, I think that's going to be really helpful. And we may identify something further. The channel bed elevations is a really important thing, and potentially some water surface slope data collection may be coming soon also.
Thank you.
Okay. Bill? Anything else?
I hope.
Yeah. Thank you for being the interpreter.
No, no. Yes. The charts you show here,
yes,
are they then compilations of all these various parties and their data? Is that how you're, and are they apples to apples when they're put in the basket, or is it large apples and small apples, or is it different kinds of fruits in the basket when you assemble these different groups?
Well, when it comes to the figures for the channel parameters, figures 2 through 5 in the EOSR, that's all conducted by now Humboldt Redwood Company. Those are apples. When it comes to the turbidity and suspended sediment monitoring, those are conducted and generated by different monitoring groups. They, I would say, are all apples, perhaps slightly different varieties of apples. And because we, you notice with the figures, I said those data are provisional and subject to change. And while they've been processed and finalized, I said that because I think that as we identify the the variation in the methods, what that result is on the resulting loads and flow calculations, that we may make some modifications or we may just put an error bar on each of those. So does that answer your question?
Well, really going towards the, I mean, I look at these charts and they go up and down and from year to year, and I'm not qualified to assess if that's a meaningful up and then a meaningful down, or if it's just what's happening. And I guess I would ask it this way in terms of, do we have other river systems similar that we would be able to compare to, and not necessarily geographically so that it rained the same amount in 2003 and 2004, but just, you know, are these up and downs unique to this system, or are we looking at it? This is just kind of the way it works in the real world, whether or not it's here or 100 miles away.
I would offer that there's a lot of variability that should be expected in those sorts of parameters, especially when you have a system that is overwhelmed with sediment, has more supply than it can transport. I mean, that's what we have going in this impaired system. So I think you should expect that. I do think Elk River is unique in that the fine sediment, the proximity to the bay, the channel gradient down in the valley, the intensive management, I do think it is unique.
All right.
So, but yeah, these parameters, I'd expect variability.
And on the errata sheet, just that average residual pool depth, greater than 3 feet and 3 feet, what does that mean in terms of if you have 10 pools, there are, if you average out the depth, it's 3.1 and it's over 3 feet from all 10 of them. That's confusing to me, because if you have one really deep one and nine not so deep ones, it's 3.1, and it's kind of a meaningless number. Sorry.
Well, what they do is they have long survey reaches and they measure the depth of the pools. And then they do, in fact, average them. So while they may have shallower pools, they may have deeper pools. That's the issue with averages. But it indicates, it does help to normalize, because pools do change year to year, you know. But generally, do we still have sufficient depth is what that parameter is supposed to tell you. I don't know.
All right. Just an errata on the errata. It's figure one here. It should be figure five, I think.
Good point.
Yeah. And Prop 50 funding, is this money's, we're pleased with what we've done, but we're running out of money, or we've got a whole bundle left to spend and we can do other things? Or
On that particular grant, it's maybe a third to halfway through the grant. It does several things. Under the particular piece I referred to, where RCAA is working with the TAC, they're very early in that particular piece. And that's partly why we're looking at what direction maybe is the most appropriate to go with that piece, because it's still early on. I'm pleased with the resources going there.
All right, but from this, I'd take from that then there's monies to keep the TAC moving forward.
So yes.
Sounds like a
yes.
good thing.
So. That's fair. That's a good characterization.
Anybody else? Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Seeking sense of staff. We've been have visitors returned from the closet, and maybe you want to go back to the creamery issue, or you want to.
We're prepared to go back to the creamery issue. We think we have.